C-158. Number 3A.
Well, let me shortly recapitulate the main points we were considering. Namely, see, in that chapter on prayer, Mrs. Eddy says that Jesus taught his disciples one brief prayer. I don't know something nicer than to feel that for the millions of problems I may have to solve, I don't have to know million kinds of different prayers, but one brief prayer. I mean, the depth of it is enormous to see that one could reduce the whole gamut of evil to a single one evil, to the evil one, and handle it through one brief prayer that covers all human needs. One brief prayer. Well, so often we hear, well, how shall I pray on over this problem? As if there would be thousands of different prayers. There is one brief prayer. Well, Mrs. Eddy gave one chapter on prayer. She didn't give many chapters on prayer. And in this one chapter on prayer, she gave one principle of prayer. It's always only one. It's so simple. So often one says, well, Christian Science, as we teach it, is very complicated. Well, it isn't. It is very simple. It's so simple that our complicated sense looks at it in a very complicated way. That's all there is about it. Sometimes I give a talk, and somebody would say, well, that was very complicated today, and a minute afterwards somebody would say, well, that was so simple that if I could understand it, everybody can understand it. So what is difficult and what is simple? Difficult and simple is something that goes on in one's own mind. If one's own mind is complicated, well, then science is complicated. If in one's if we are in our mind single in its purpose and single-minded, then science is certainly very simple. In fact, it's so simple that for the complicated mind, sometimes it's very difficult to grasp. So here, in regard to prayer, we have that Jesus taught one simple prayer. Then we can see that there is only one chapter on prayer. And in that one chapter on prayer, she deals with the one evil, the evil one. Not with millions of evil. And also we see that she gives one principle of prayer. Then we have seen that really everything that constitutes prayer goes on within this oneness of principle. That prayer has never anything to do with something outside of principle, getting into contact with principle and getting from principle a reward to the outside again. But that true prayer, scientific prayer, is a prayer that goes on within the consciousness of the one principle. That there is but one petitioner that can pray. That really can pray, namely only one petitioner in the whole universe, namely man in God's own likeness. That's the only true petitioner. And there is only one petitioned, namely God. And there is only one means of praying to God, and that's the sevenfold scientific mean. There are not other means. But the one sevenfold means. And then comes always the big point, there is only one purpose, one reward, namely only God's reward that can come out of a true prayer. Never a reward which is according to human planning and human desire and human wishing. Never. There's only one nature, namely God's nature. So it's all happening within the one. And in the measure as we see that, we begin to see that only the mind-like man can pray to the one mind through mind-like qualities, and at what it can receive out of this communion with the one God is only mind-like results. Mind-like results. That we should never forget, that we receive mind-like results, that we receive spirit-like results, and then soul-like results, and so on. And never something else. See, and in us is something which tries to demonstrate something which is not mind-like, but which is worldly-like, which is human mind-like. Tries to demonstrate something which is matter-like, not spirit-like. Something to demonstrate which is not soul-like, but which is like, which our senses like. Something which is not principle-like, but something which our personal sense likes. And that's the point we have to be very, very clear. Because if we don't see that, we will always be dissatisfied, and the material-mindedness in us will always scrutinize, can you say scrutinize, the spiritual sense, will always dominate or be in war or dissatisfied. See, like you have that story in Samuel with Peninnah and with Hannah. See, Peninnah was always scorning, so to say, at Hannah, because Hannah didn't bring forth the fruits. No, she did bring forth fruits, but she didn't bring forth fruits according to what Peninnah thought were fruits. And so Peninnah was... if we take those two as one character, we could see that Hannah first had to wean herself away from the desire to bring forth fruits which were like the fruits of Peninnah. That's what was her big problem. That's the big problem in ourselves, that the Hannah in us wants to bring forth the fruits of Peninnah. And that can never be done. And because we want to demonstrate that, there is always that friction. Until Hannah sees that she can only bring forth the fruits which belong to God, and therefore she was willing to say, I give it back to God. The moment she was willing to see that the fruits of prayer must be God-like and must be a possession of God and the quality of God, at that moment she got peace in her heart. And getting peace in her heart, she was looking out now for spiritual fruits, that prayer will bring forth spiritual fruits, and she did bring forth spiritual fruits at once. And what were those spiritual fruits? Well, the spiritual fruits were prophecy at that time. It was a spiritual idea of principle. Just as it could have been a spiritual idea of mind, or a spiritual idea of spirit, or of soul, or of principle. At that time it was a spiritual idea of principle, which was in its impact on the world 1,000,000,000 times bigger than all the fruits that Penina could bring forth. And so today we must see that the signs of the time are the signs of the time. Namely, that we live in the period of truth as love, in the 6,000 year of the period of truth as love, where we have to bring forth the fruits of truth as love, and not the fruits of earlier periods. We don't have to bring forth the fruits of the year 1000, or the year 1500, or the year 1800, the fruits of today. And to bring forth the fruits of today really means that we are so selfless, that we are so pure in our desires that we don't obstruct the birth of what's going on now in the slightest, because the birth is going on anyway. God is not dependent on our prayers that He fulfills His plan. That's one thing we have to be clear, that God is not dependent on our prayers, but He goes to fulfill His plan. And if we are not being the channel of it, then the very stones will cry out for it. The very stones will cry out the message. So the point is that we really are Hannah. You say Hannah? Hannah. Hannah. You see, which is willing really to let that reward come forth as its fruit, which is the Savior of today, and not the Savior of yesterday, and not the Savior of tomorrow, but the Savior of today, the fruits of today, which is when we take truth as love in the sixth day of creation. It's the womanhood, it's that infinite self-containment of which Mrs. Eddy speaks, an emanation of the infinite self-containment. A wonderful description of how today is really the day where the calculus must come out of its matrix, where the matrix of immortality must give birth and give out, emanate the calculus. And if we can fulfill this sign of the time and give all our energy and love to fundamental research in pure science, we do the biggest job we can do. Because we obey the order of being, divine order of being. Well, that is all contained in the attitude of prayer, you see. Taking the right attitude of prayer, putting away all preconceived notions on prayer, all preconceived notions on the petitioner, on the petitioned, of the means of petition, and on the result of the petition, putting that all away and letting God work out its own plan, well then our prayers are really fulfilled in its bigness. Another point on prayer. So often, as we have just been talking about Penina and Hannah, so often we say, now, what are the results of our study? Show me the results. Yes, let's consider the results of our prayer. But let's consider the results of our prayer as the science of being shows them, and not as the human mind asks them. Now, what are the results of prayer? She says in that chapter on prayer, I have taken far too worse ribbon to type my things. I can't read them now. But perhaps it's just as well that I have to speak for what the Lord tells me to say. She says that the highest prayer is not one of faith merely. It is demonstration. So it says the highest sense of prayer is demonstration. What demonstration? And so she says in the same chapter on prayer, she says, we reach the science of Christianity through demonstration of the divine nature. That's demonstration. The highest demonstration of prayer, as she shows it, is the demonstration of the divine nature. What is that divine nature? What is that demonstration? Well, we can take that chapter and say, all right, what are my results? What are my demonstration? And the demonstration at this point, don't tell me that I haven't said at this point, it's the first chapter, I don't talk about the 12th chapter, at this point is, have I demonstrated in the first subject, have I demonstrated now that I have a much more open mind than before? Have I now demonstrated that I have a much more unprejudiced mind than before? That's a demonstration. Have I demonstrated that I have a higher, pure desire to know God as He is than before? That's a demonstration. That's much more important, that demonstration, than to get rid of a headache. Much more. Then we can ask ourselves, well, what are the results? Can I show forth the result that I'm more grateful today for spiritual things and for God as He is than I was ever before? Can I demonstrate that? Can I give that fruit? If I can do, well, then I have won something enormous. The third says, well, show me your results, show me your fruits. Well, what fruits? And she says, what fruits? Says, well, are you more willing to reform than you were before? Or are you still as stubborn as before that you want to have your own way? Or have you become so much meeker that something in you always says, I want to change, I'm willing to change, I'm quite meek enough to change, or not? That's a demonstration. The fourth says, what is your demonstration? What is your results? Show me your fruits. And Penina would laugh and say, you don't have fruits. And Hannah would come and say, I show you the fruits. I have become much more impersonal. I show a much higher degree of intellectual and scientific honesty than ever before. Can we show that forth? If we can, then we have grasped something of prayer. In the fifth, she says, what are these results? And she says, well, do I rely today more on spiritual, clear, scientific understanding in working out my problems than I used to do? Or do I still rely on a blind, unknown faith in God? Can we show forth that result? And in the sixth, she would say, well, what are your results? Do you go more often in the sanctuary of spirit? Do you deny more often, day in and day out, the errors of sense? Do you more than ever before affirm the truth of being than before? If you do, you have made a great step forward. Or in the seventh, she would say, oh, show me your result, your demonstration. What is that? She says, are you more happy and rejoicing in the beauty and bounty of being than before? Or are you still dissatisfied and still wanting to go into the holy city and into heaven? Or are you rejoicing being in the city and being in heaven and rejoicing being there? Can you show forth the bounty of that attitude? Now, these are demonstrations. That's the demonstration of which she speaks at this point, of the word as the word. And they are not to be laughed at, because we know absolutely well that if our consciousness is set in line with God, that no animal magnetism has any chance to get us out of order. And to be in order with God is to be protected from evil. Be protected from evil of any sort. Protected from sin and sickness and from despondency and everything. That's demonstration. And the order of the chapters of being show us where demonstration begins. But also show where demonstration ends. But that's the 16th chapter. But let's be ordered. And let's not take the end for the beginning. That's what we have seen in the first talk in that chapter. Was it Caution in the Truth or what? Where it was, where he showed now take that we shouldn't take the end for the beginning. That we should start at the beginning and demonstrate the beginning. And let that demonstration carry us on to the second chapter and demonstrate that chapter. Why should demonstration always be only a matter of getting a better job or a better home or a better this or a better that? Why? Because we are a penina to the nth degree and laugh and ridicule spiritual fruits. That's the trouble. That's how the mortal is made up. And that's where we have to start with the correction if we take the way of life in and of spirit. So, I feel that if we go through over the first five chapters, which we have done in the last 2 years, and if we ask to every, I have asked this question now for the first chapter, so we could ask for the second chapter and third chapter, do I show the results of what the subjects of this chapter were telling about? Do I show those results instead of others? If we study the first chapter, we should show the results of the first chapter and not the results of the 12th chapter. Is that clear? That if our thought is occupied with the principle of the first chapter, that should bring forth the fruits of the first chapter, not of the 10th chapter or of the 16th chapter. And that would free us and give us a wider sense and a happier sense of what we are doing if we would stick to that science as we see it and not always muddle up all the classifications of the textbook. Naturally, that's quite true. Every demonstration, say now, let's go back to have a concrete example of the first chapter. Every demonstration of the first chapter has always healing in its wings. Always. Always. That if I can say in the first subject, yes, I have become much wider in my mind, much opener in my mind, much more scientific in my mind. Well, that naturally frees me of a selfish desire and preconceived attitude, and we know so well that all that is the cause of so many diseases. And so it has healing in its will. It heals me of a prejudiced attitude. In the second subject, it heals me of that longing to be only grateful when one gets a material blessing. It heals me in the third subject that I speculate always with the mercy of God. It heals me in the fourth chapter of hypocrisy, of intellectual dishonesty. It heals me in the fifth subject of reliance on blind faith. It heals me in the sixth subject, really, of a corporeal consciousness. And it heals me in the seventh subject of wanting or of thinking that I have to demonstrate numberless problems and to handle numberless senses of evil, but just the evil one. You see, it heals me of something, but the healing is much wider than just blood and bones. Much wider. And it always starts with the mental, spiritual attitude. So, I like that saying of Jesus, where in John he says, well, my doctrine is not mine, but his that sent me. If any man will do his will, he shall know of the doctrine, whether it be of God or whether I speak of myself. See, he shows that so clearly. He says, well, do you know now, how do you know that your prayers have been fulfilled? How can you know? If you ask Penina, she says, your prayers have not been fulfilled. Penina will always say that. Because Penina wants the very opposite of God. So if you ask Penina, she will always deny it. But Jesus said, but in you, if you do pray aright, if you do see prayer aright, then you know by yourself. Nobody has to tell you if you have your fruits, if it is from God or not. It is an inward certitude which is not dependent of anybody who says you have demonstrated something big or small or so. That's not true. One knows it oneself. One knows it oneself. Well, I just like the chapter on prayer. I was last summer going over some of the minor prophets. And in the minor prophets, there is one called Malachi. And Malachi really tells a similar story of prayer. In Malachi, which funnily enough is the last book in the Old Testament, therefore the bridge to Jesus, and Jesus always prayed. That was his way of handling things. He went and prayed. And in Malachi, it seems that Malachi wanted to show the attitude of prayer in some way. He saw that God has to be approached in its fullness, that the people tried to fool God by approaching God with lack, with a sense of lack. And his whole message turns a lot, besides other points, turns a lot about this point of approaching God rightly, and that if we approach God in our fullness, that he will open the floodgates. He says, he says to the people, ye offer polluted bread upon mine altar. It's polluted. It's not pure. See? They didn't offer wholeness. Was polluted. And if ye offer the blind for sacrifice, is it not evil? Said, you don't offer it with spiritual understanding. It's blindness that you offer. And you don't think that that is evil? You think you can offer blind animals and think that you get fullness? See, blind beliefs. He said, and if ye offer the lame and sick, is it not evil? See, he uncovers that they tried to come near to God with an incomplete, with a sense, with a sense of lack, with a sense of blindness, with a sense of impurity, of lameness, you see. He said, ye brought that which was torn, and the lame and the sick, that which was torn, not the wholeness, you see, just parts, bits. See, whereas the chapter on prayer says, man must approach God in his wholeness, or God doesn't know you, because God is wholeness and can only know wholeness.